Welcome to the 47th episode of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck? A podcast where we revisit classic films from the 80s and 90s that actually might suck. My name is Kalen Egan.
My name is Travis Santel.
Listen,
You were very, 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 very close, but I cannot believe you're still saying the word classic.
Can I just say that you think people care? And that's really weird to me.
I don't count on other people. I count on only me. And the perfectionist in me, It cringes at the word classic.
I like
the word great.
I like a little bit of a slapdash. I think it gives things life, breathes life into things,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, sure. I get it.
Jazz becomes jazz because of a couple wrong notes,
yeah,
Kalen.
But as we've also discovered, you know, you keep to a simple structure and you hit that correctly, and then you can do all sorts of things. The jazz is the delivery, baby.
Well, the idea that we're putting this out on the same day every week, that's the structure. We're doing it. That's the structure.
That's part of it.
The backbone. It's just we show up every week.
I mean, man,
relentlessly, we do it.
I strain myself every time we do an intro to think of some not aggressive original way to
you should just change the words
deploy.
You know what also
no people don't like that
yeah people like that
people you don't know, like when you change the words
you know what makes me sad about your reaction to that is that I lost it.
Are you fucking kidding me? Is that jazz?
No, I just don't care. I realized halfway through I didn't care because what I was going to say is that it's funny to me that you think that I've listened to what you say during the intro and you think that that's why I should remember.
Well, look, 47 times this has happened.
I don't pay attention. And then I like lost interest in even saying that halfway through.
Yeah,
I was
like,
who cares?
No, I mean, and I am with you when you say that we don't want to talk about the intro. That's not the idea behind the intro is to talk about it. No.
Let's do it some more.
Can I move on?
Can I litigate something a little bit from last episode, please?
Oh, please.
If I may.
By all means.
You did not put Porky's 2 in this bag.
I know.
Can we talk about that or should we just move on?
No, I don't know what happened. It's a major oversight.
All police academies are in the bag. All of them.
Yeah.
1 through 95.
Yeah.
And then
every Halloween is in the bag.
Every Halloween.
Every Nightmare on Elm Street.
But one Porky's.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I just fucked up.
Do we add Porky's
too? Because
I am curious. Well, here's the question I have to ask. Is it the same director writer?
90% sure it isn't.
Okay. I'm more interested if it's the same guy.
By the way, you know what we didn't say about Bob Clark?
Uh-oh.
He's also the auteur behind Baby Geniuses.
Oh, he's great.
I mean,
he's a real gem. American gem.
Why don't we do this? Instead of putting I know this is a waste of time, but instead of putting Porky's 2 in the bag, why don't I look up the synopsis of Porky's 2 and I'll just read that out loud.
Okay, while you're doing that, I just want to tell the listeners that I did look up on YouTube Taking It All Off 1987, which Kalen referenced in the last episode. And the opening scene is
written and directed by Bob Clark, Porky's 2.
We have to do it.
We're putting it in. Same cast.
Oh, we're for sure
this
watching
that. This is crazy.
That. Anyway, the opening scene of Taking It All Off is comically bad. Surprise.
Oh, and something Travis asked me about Porky's is, do you think that Porky's 2 is about Porky's?
Yeah.
I can now confirm it is not. Unlike the previous film, Porky himself does not appear.
Well, they ripped down Porky. They bested Porky. Got his comeuppance. He's done. He ran back to his hovel, curled tail between his legs. He's done. He is done.
Stop fat shaming Porky, Travis. we're putting this in. We may have to fake pull this because it would be so good to do it.
Uncle Buck. Can we agree to not fat shame anyone in Uncle Buck?
I wasn't even going to bring it up.
No, I just say let's not do it.
Because one of the cool things about Uncle Buck is that his size is not really a conversation point.
It's
not
his
topic.
His joie de vivre.
But I will, as the one and only thing we'll say about this, one thing I remember about Uncle Buck is he's very big. And he's almost in. I love John Candy. Mm. And I remember even watching Uncle Buck thinking like, maybe he's a little too big, like unhealthy, but that's all I'll say about
it. It is played for appropriate comedic effect, where the towering nature of him versus the children is I think, very, very good.
Yes.
This is the first John Candy film I saw in the theater, and I remember it very, very well.
I didn't realize I had a theater memory of it until you said that.
Uh-huh.
Here's my theater memory.
Tell me.
As a kid, I went with my friend Justin who is, I don't know, I no longer keep in contact with him, but he was a nice guy. We went and we went.
Oh, great.
And we watched the first 50.
It's just so weird. Like, I had to throw that he was a nice guy just to make sure people knew. He didn't lose contact because he was a bad guy. He lost contact because time moves on. Time marches on.
That's right.
He happened to be a nice guy. Don't worry, guys. It wasn't a bad fallout in case you're worried about Kalen's relationship with Justin. What the fuck? All right, go on.
So we watched about 15 minutes of Uncle Buck. It was just us alone in the theater. Alone in the theater, okay? No parent.
That's cool.
And for when it was out, I was young for this. So they showed the first 15 minutes or so of Uncle Buck, and it's my first experience ever the film breaks.
Whoa!
Yeah. It fucked up.
That's
like the,
cool.
The whole thing messed up. And it, obviously it was being filmed, projected. And so we waited a minute, and somebody says... yells out from the projection booth, "Hey, we got to fix it. Do you guys want to start from where you left off, or do you want us to start the movie again?"
Oh, that's cool.
And the whole audience got to vote. And so ultimately what they decided was left off, which is what my vote was. But my friend Justin was like, "Wait, like, don't you want to hear the kids say all those swear words again?" And I was like, "Oh, good point." But we lost. We didn't get our way at that time anyway. But like, he was talking about when Macaulay Culkin's going like nuts, like, and all this stuff.
That's a good story.
And he loved it. And so he was like, "But we have an opportunity here to see that again."
We should reach out to Justin. See what he's up
to
these
days.
Yeah, Justin, do you remember this moment? Also, you're a nice guy.
Are you still a nice guy?
Yeah. Are you? I'm stoked about this. I'm trying to think of the first movie I saw John Candy in when I became exposed to the idea of him.
Mm-hmm.
I this is going to sound weird. I think SCTV, honestly.
What?
Which is really weird. I understand that. But I think, yeah, I had like, I don't know if that's true, but in my head that's true.
I wonder the same thing. Well, what, TV?
I don't know. I had a sketch comedy.
I can't imagine that's right, man.
It feels weird to me.
Because like, there were a lot of, he was in a lot of stuff. Like he was in, I would have seen him in
Home Alone 1, probably.
Home Alone 1.
That may be the one. I have a distinct memory. But here's the thing. When I saw Home Alone, I know it wasn't Little Shop of Horrors for me. When I saw Home Alone the first one, I was like, "Oh, that's John Candy."
I
remember
feel
like
I felt that way,
yeah,
too.
John Candy's
I
in
feel
this
like
movie.
I felt that way, too.
Yeah, so it wasn't the first time I'd seen him.
Wow, that's really interesting. I mean, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Which came later for me when I saw it. I didn't see that early.
Yeah, and I probably didn't see it that early either.
But all that is to say, I think Uncle Buck was the second thing I saw him in. Because I have a distinct memory of being going to the theater and being like, the thing I saw this guy in, I thought he was really funny or really interesting.
Yeah.
And, oh, he gets his own movie. That's awesome.
Yeah. It would make sense to me that Uncle Buck might be the first time I saw him or really clocked him.
Mm-hmm.
But John Candy looms large in my childhood because I think I've mentioned on here before that I used to rent every comedy on the shelf.
Yeah,
like,
taking
I loved
it off.
That.
Taking it all off. Zapped.
Well, before that, I would rent like Blues Brothers and everything that was sort of SNL-y, even though I didn't watch Saturday Night Live. Those were the
probably
funny guys.
Blues Brothers is the first time I saw him, actually. Yes.
Doing his orange whip thing?
Well, his cop thing was so funny in that movie.
Right.
I think, sorry, go on. That's probably where it was, though.
So, I would rent, and obviously John Candy had a lot of movies from there, including like Who's Harry Crumb, mm-hmm. which I rented a lot. And I don't remember much about Who's Harry Crumb, except thinking that certain gags were somewhat inappropriate. But like so I had a very strong association between John Candy and like Chuck Berry. Like, what's that fucking, no.
Chuck Berry?
Yeah.
This your cousin, Marvin
Wait
Berry.
Wait a minute. There's a what's the song from Who's Harry Crumb?
I don't remember.
I have to think about this for a second. I'm going to cut some dead air out. Just hold on.
I Got You by James Brown.
Wait, how's that go?
Dun, 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 dun. I feel good.
I feel good. That's it. It's I Feel Good. That's James Brown?
Yeah.
Okay. So it was James Brown that I was thinking of. I Feel Good. And we just spent an unbelievable amount of time trying to figure that out.
I don't I'm not happy.
Which I'm going to cut out.
I've lost like all of my energy.
I know. That's my fault. I really ground us to a halt. But the point is, I associate John Candy movies
with James Brown,
specifically with I Feel Good. Huh. And John Candy, like when I think of him, the theme that hits my head is, I knew that I would. And I don't even know if it's in Who's Harry Crumb, but that's what
I just looked it up.
Okay, I associate that with every role John Candy's ever been.
You mean, is it in Uncle Buck?
It's not in it.
Okay, because No.
I got it from Who's Harry Crumb.
Yes.
But it feels like, to me, the theme music of John Candy.
I see. Okay, that's a great story, man. I'm really happy we spent 20 minutes on that part of our day. I mean, really great. Thank you.
Look, you're the one who wanted to record 9 of these episodes in a row. This is not my fault.
We're getting into a definite deep hole about movies right now. Listen, also in Who's Harry Crumb, it's Holding Out for a Hero by Bonnie Tyler.
Yeah, which Matt Robinson mentioned on our Short Circuit 2 episode.
Honestly, one of my favorite 80s songs. Just because it's used in so many films to such great effect.
So let's talk about Uncle Buck a little more.
I don't want to.
So is there anything more to say? I mean, look, I like it a lot. I remember liking it a lot. Yeah. I've seen it fairly recently. Lily likes it, and I watched it with her, and that was fun.
Yeah. I really miss these comedies, these single-hander comedies, where it's funny, but there's also a pretty clear plot and an emotional undercurrent. Yeah. Like that's a specific genre of film we haven't done in a little bit, and I kind of miss them. I haven't seen one like that in a while. So
yeah,
I'm pretty stoked about it.
I mean, nobody does John Hughes movies anymore, and nobody could do John Hughes like John Hughes. And I mean, even though this isn't one of his teenage stories, it kind of is. There are beats of it that are clearly familiar from John Hughes movies, but it's mostly a starring vehicle for his friend John Candy, and he's great. I think he's great.
I think he's going to be great. I am concerned about his weight and health.
He's big.
When I looked up the soundtrack, a clip of the movie came up, and I was startled just now.
I know.
I had forgotten he was that big in this film. Because my memory of him is kind of Home Alone era.
Home Alone and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which is like he's... This is a weird thing, which I really didn't want to talk about. But it's the same thing with Chris Farley.
Yeah.
Like there's a time where... he's too big.
Yeah.
And it's like the joke of his size. Honestly, I think of this sometimes with Jonah Hill, too. It's like comedy has a really great tradition of big but sort of healthy, athletic comedians. You know, Abbott Costello, Fatty Arbuckle. Yeah. Like this is a classic thing. And people who have the dexterity to do big motions, it's a funny look, you know, I guess you could say. But with John Candy and with Chris Farley and with Jonah Hill, there are times...
And Porky.
And Porky.
Too big.
Yeah. It's... oh, man. I
get you. No, I get what you're saying. The clip I just saw, the freeze frame I just saw, he seemed really large. So this is going to be a little weird to watch. Some of these movies also going back to, especially comedies that have... real world endings that are sort of, you know, that stick in your head as a kid growing up, have some resonances that are maybe unintentional and unexpected. So I'm looking forward to seeing.
You think you're going to like it?
I think I will like it. I do. I really think I'll like it.
Do you think there's going to be much to say about Uncle Buck?
I didn't think there's going to be much to say about Porky's, and there was a lot.
We know Uncle Buck. Here's what I expect us to say. Here's what I say. Okay. I think we're going to say that was a warm, nice, pretty good movie.
Okay, here's something to think about whilst we watch, is the style, the specific style of the comedy, and how has that mutated and changed, and would this movie play well in modern day audiences?
Sounds good. Let's think
about that, Kalen.
Nice topic.
Guys, thanks so much for listening. We'll join you in 30 seconds.
Where do you live?
In the city.
Do you have a house?
Apartment.
On a rent?
Rent.
What do you do for a living?
Lots of things.
Where's your office?
I don't have one.
How come?
I don't need one.
Where's your wife?
Don't have one.
How come?
It's a long story.
Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
How come?
It's an even longer story.
Are you my dad's brother?
What's your record for consecutive questions asked?
38.
I'm your dad's brother, all right.
You have much more hair on your nose than my dad.
How nice of you to notice.
I'm a kid, that's my job.
I'm feeling much better about the world.
Are we started?
Oh, we're in. I just feel like, wow. I feel like I'm in a good spot now. I don't know how much of this, again, here's the thing. When things happen in your life and they are temporarily equivalent with other things that happen. It's hard to parse out your emotional reaction to just one of them. So I don't know if pulling all those bad movies in a row is what put me in a funk, or if it was the election. I don't know if, you know, as time passes, I'm just getting feeling like a more healthy human being. My personal life's doing well.
This is a difference of days.
Yeah, yeah. But this is, but I really feel like I just needed that movie at that time. I don't think it's a perfect film by any means, but I feel really good right now. I just want to tell you that. I just feel like, I know I came off as a bit of a jerk for about 3 or 4 episodes. I didn't mean it.
You don't need to rehash that.
No, I'm not. I'm just telling you.
At this point, that's weeks ago.
No, I'm just telling you, you know, I just feel like this has been a nice, I'm back on our experiment is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm back. This is the kind of thing I can talk about and feel happy talking about.
That's cool, man. I get it. This movie to me feels like a new, sort of a new shade of our experiment.
Oh yeah.
Because, you know, you said it's not a perfect film. Most certainly that is the case. But it has something in it. I've lost my words. I didn't expect to be starting to talk about this so fast. John Candy.
I wanted to say this while you collect your thoughts. Yeah. Caitlin and I make a point of once we finish a film, we stumble around and bumble around and get to the recording space.
Yeah.
But we don't talk about anything related to the film. So we right. intentionally avoid any hint of like, did you like it? Did you hate it? We save it all for the podcast. So I don't really know where he stands on this. I have a guess based on him. But I'm ready to hear it right now.
I don't know where I stand on the movie. It's a 3-star movie, mm-hmm. which is like, yeah, it's all right. Mm-hmm. It's got all sorts of weird ideas and weird sort of rough edges, I guess you would call them, but not in a like independent spirit way. It's just kind of like, you know, there's gags that don't work. There's our character arcs work. That don't work, mm-hmm. that don't make any sense.
There's performances that don't work, I would say.
Totally.
But it's a kind hearted film.
I don't care about that.
I do.
In this case, I don't care about that. Because what I was going to say is that for parts of this movie, I was almost crying with how much I love John Candy.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we said that, I guess we suggested certainly that we liked him at the beginning, mm-hmm. what I forgot was how much, was how much I liked him. And I became, let's say, a third of the way through this movie, right from the beginning, I was like, oh man, I love this guy. But then a third of the way through the movie, I was like, I don't care what this movie chucks at me right now, as long as I get to spend as much time as possible thinking about and watching and spending time with John Candy.
How old is he in this movie?
Don't know.
Late 30s, maybe?
Late 30s. Mm. Mid to late 30s mm-hmm. is my guess. Mm-hmm. And it really, all I wanted to do, I don't mean to derail the podcast. We can talk about the warm-heartedness of the film. We can talk about anything. But
we're going
to
talk about the movie.
It's all I want to talk about is John Candy.
Yeah, but we can do both.
I'm just saying, sure. That's what I'm here for. Stuff. You just go on a monologue, and every time it becomes about John Candy, I'll contribute.
Okay. Yeah, fine. We'll have the Q word will be John Candy.
Okay, great.
That's how you'll know to like perk up. Otherwise, you can. I'll listen to everything.
I'm looking forward to your podcast about Uncle Buck.
Yeah, great. And you can just chime in about John Candy.
About John Candy.
Yeah, that's okay. Let me actually just start with the things that were super weird. There are camera angles and choices in this film that are, I would say, almost literally inexplicable. I don't know. And this is John Hughes's, what, you know, 5th or 6th, 7th film?
Well, we looked it up. It's his seventh film. Yeah. 7th of 8.
Yeah, Curly Sue being the last.
Did you guys know that? John Hughes, I mean, I guess you knew. Like, if you think about it, he only made 8 movies. But he stopped well before he died. Like, 10 years before he left this mortal coil or more, and he just stopped directing.
We should just also say what happened to Curly Sue before you forget.
Well, yeah, we looked that up too. I mean, Curly Sue is in our bag, I think, and we will watch it someday. But in researching this, maybe somebody else who listens to the show knew this already. It was a total shock to me because I was like, whatever happened to Curly Sue when I saw that was John Hughes's last movie? And so I looked it up. And she was on the Wikipedia article is amazing because it's like this actress was on season 10 of The Voice.
The Voice.
And then it's like she sang and all 4 judges turned around.
All 4 judges.
And she chose Christina Aguilera.
Christina Aguilera. Yeah, you guys.
Keep it up.
No,
and
it's
then,
smart.
And then she, then they were like, she went, she beat this person.
I'm not gonna say it.
And then she's just doing like, everything then right. Then they're like, she beat another person. And I was like, wow, she did great in The Voice. And then it was like, she won season 10 of
Curly
The Voice.
Curly Sue won season 10 of The Voice, you guys.
How fucking crazy
That's
is that?
Crazy.
I mean, I know The Voice is a popular show, but I never heard that shit.
No, I've never seen The Voice, but I know it's good.
Don't you think that should have penetrated our world? Mm-hmm. Curly Sue won The Voice.
I think that says more about how not in the culture Curly Sue is.
Oh, I thought you were going to say how not in the culture we are.
No, that's obviously true. We sit in your basement and talk about old films. Obviously, we don't have our finger on the pulse of Hollywood.
Oh, my God. When we started doing this, it wasn't in my basement. And now that it is, it's nine levels lower in terms of sadness.
No, we're two dudes who sit...
Sometimes we watch Porky's. Sometimes we watch Uncle Buck.
I hold a lavalier microphone in front of my mouth without a pop guard on it because we're too cheap to have a clip. It's a 30-cent clip that clips on your shirt. My other podcast, we have clips, Kalen, and pop screens. I have to hold this in front of my mouth like it's a tiny Bob Barker mouse microphone, yeah. And it's super fucked up. So that's where we're at in our life.
I'm going to tweet a picture in association with this episode of you holding your mic. And also with my Dick Tracy toys in the background. This is what people need to know about.
All right, that happened.
Took the picture.
So you'll know temporarily when that happened. Uncle Buck, listen, there are lots of weird... I mean...
You know what I felt about that? And I know I said I wasn't going to talk about Uncle Buck.
Well, I knew you'd be unable
here's,
to resist.
Here's why I don't... You can talk about whatever you want. Here's how I dismissed it in my mind, which was like...
The movie or the
No,
moments?
These moments.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, they aren't trying very hard. John Hughes... The only reason this movie exists is because John Hughes was like, what would be a fun thing to put John Candy in?
Mm-hmm.
So everything else is completely dismissible. And I think that those moments are things that he, in an inside joke way, found funny.
Almost certainly.
And just messed around.
Let me be clear.
And he was like, I'm done.
Let me be clear. Those don't bother me, nor do I actually... I would not describe them as lazy. I describe them as John Hughes' version of experimental filmmaking.
Yeah.
You know? Like, and that's funny
to
me.
In the loosest possible way. He's not looking to achieve anything.
No. He's just like, that'd be a weird thing to do. Like, I haven't done this before. I mean, they'll have whole scenes where it's just a... face center frame talking just past camera, reverse shot, face center frame, which we've seen in other films to great effect. Does not work in a John Hughes film. Doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, what Travis is talking about is there are almost moments of surrealism.
That's right.
Which, think about Ferris Bueller.
Mm.
They're organic to that film. The surrealism, which is sort of filtered through Ferris's point of view, sometimes works. You know, the soundtrack will be a certain thing, or they'll play Star Wars as a car drives over the frame. You know, mm-hmm. John Hughes has done this kind of thing before. And even in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, suddenly, you know, John Candy turns into a devil when they drive between two trucks. Like, he's messed around with this kind of thing. Weird Science is full of it. The point is, here, it doesn't fit.
No.
There's
lots of moments of it, but never tied together in any way. Here's an example of it. At one point, John Candy's hiding behind a door, and this woman kicks it in, and he ducks behind it and gets away with it, and then puts his head back to the door, and she kicks it again, and he goes comically flying through the air in a hyper-real way.
I thought that was a good gag. The one that I thought was bad, or like of
there's
others.
25 of these types of moments.
I like that one, though. That one's kind of funny.
But you... It's a gag. It's a shticky gag.
Yes, big time.
Right.
But it's a little funny because at least it plays by the rules of comedy, which are like, I didn't see that like setup punchline. I didn't quite see like
structurally it's
delay.
Fine. It's the flying through
it's
the air.
It's the tonal stuff I get, but like I didn't care by that point because like that stuff doesn't matter. The ones that are really inexplicable in terms of like, why is this still in the movie? Or like there's a part where, okay, Uncle Buck has taken to drying the family clothes in a microwave. This is all fine. And so the little girl in the family, played by Gabby Hoffman, very charmingly, she's been on our podcast before. I expect her to be again.
She has not been a guest on the podcast.
No, but I mean
to
a movie
clear
of
to
ours.
Listeners,
she's been an actress on a show,
be clear.
A movie of ours
that
we watched. And it was called Sleepless in Seattle.
All right.
So Uncle Buck has been microwaving their clothes to get them dry because the dryer is broken because he broke the dryer. And so she's at school and... her teacher, a strange man holding a ruler with slicked back hair and nerd, like comical nerd glasses.
Shitty Jason Schwartzman.
Who looks young, like a 25-year-old, PA. Mm. He goes like, does anybody have any weird stories?
Yeah.
Like, that's what he says, right?
Basically. Any stories from this weekend?
Yeah, and she says, she tells a story about how Uncle Buck has been drying their clothes in the microwave. And he goes, oh, like, why is he doing that? And she says, this is the entire scene. She goes, because the goddamn dryer's broken. And he goes, blasphemy!
Holding a ruler up.
And then cut, the end.
That was the one time in the film Kaylin and I looked at each other and had like a really weird moment of, what's happening?
And it's like out of a fucking Roger Corman comedy, like John Waters comedy. Like, it makes no sense.
Yeah. And again.
And I forgave it because I was like, they don't give a fuck.
Yeah, but this, none of this bothered me in a way that this normally would. Just no, because either. I'm on a nice little journey. Because
I was crying about how much I love John Candy.
So wait, here's the plot real quick so I can just get into some other specific scenes. So there's two parents who have a tenuous, at best, relationship with their children. Two are young. Macaulay Culkin and Gabby Hoffman are, what, around 5, 6, 7, 8? Someone there. And there's an older daughter who's 15. The father of the mother, so the kid's grandfather, has a heart attack in the middle of the night. They can't find a babysitter for them to go up there and take care of the father. The last resort is their wacky, the father's wacky brother, Buck. And he's got a girlfriend he's having trouble with as a little side plot. And he comes over and takes care of the kids. And basically it's about kind of the power struggle between Buck and the oldest daughter as she tries to assert her independence and authority. And he's just a lovable schmuck guy who goes about it. And in the end, they reconcile. And it's all fine.
Emphasis on kind of. About that.
Yeah. But it's just a series of sketches and funny things sort of wacky hijinks. But this movie is, with one glaring exception to me, which we can get into, it's just saved by the performances. Macaulay Culkin and Gabby Hoffman are awesome, I think. Yeah. So funny. John Candy, as expressed earlier, is lovable and amazing, and they kind of let him go a little bit in certain scenes, let him do his shtick.
Yep.
And it's awesome. And I just thought the only thing that was missing for me, and the rough edges of the gags not working and the weird, you know, camera angles and stuff, that was part of the sloppiness of the film that I really liked. I thought it was better that way.
Yeah.
I just wish that the oldest daughter would have been a different actress. That's the thing.
Oh, wow. You didn't like her.
I didn't like her. And I understand that she has to be.
I did not see that coming.
I know that she has to be terrible to make him more likable. I understand that that's the dynamic that we're playing with, that for him to be, you know, for the audience to be fully on his side, his opponent, so to speak, in the film, again, as Kaylin said loosely, has to be a little devilish or Machiavellian or terrible or whatever. But she's just this like caricature of a stone cold teenager who doesn't have any heart and just spends most of the time scowling and glaring and being an asshole. And I just thought that movie is better is if she is a little more of a human being and less of a weird monster. But that's my only real character complaint.
Do you think that there are scenes edited out of this movie?
Oh, almost certainly.
Do you think that they are plot specific?
No.
You don't.
I know that the plot feels clunky, but I bet you they filmed a lot of sequences that there's only a 3 or 4 main plot points the movie meanders to that have any real girth to them.
Well, the one that it meanders to that I suspected there may be an alternate cut, long cut or alt version, and I doubt these scenes worked, but
bowling alley?
No. Knowing John Hughes, it's the movie opens before Uncle Buck is even a part of the story. You kind of see him, you kind of meet him, but he's not involved in the main plot line. He hasn't met the kids or the family yet or whatever. There's a dinner scene with the family, with the mother, the father, the three kids at the table. And the older daughter is being super sullen and quippy and mean and cruel to her parents and judgy about everything her parents do. And her mother says, "I'm tired of your ugliness." And she's like, "Oh, are you?" Like that. Like, and it's like, ugh. Mm-hmm. And the mother looks terrified of her. Mm-hmm. She looks absolutely terrified of her 15-year-old daughter. And I thought that was interesting because the mother didn't seem like she was very good at being a mom in this case. She wasn't handling certain situations very well. And basically the daughter was calling her out on it. And she was very vulnerable, but felt very vulnerable and sort of scared about that. And then they go away and Uncle Buck shows up. And there's no more interaction between the mother and the daughter. And then the end of the movie, Uncle Buck and the other kids are kind of quietly hiding in the kitchen because the parents are about to come back home. And he goes, your sister and your mom have something they need to work out. They need to work out some personal issues. So let's just stay very quiet and let them do it. The mother comes in the door, sees the daughter standing there ready to interact with her. The music swells in a John Hughes-y kind of way, and they hug. And the daughter says, "I love you." And the mother says, "Things are going to be different." Mm. What the fuck? Like, I get it. Mm-hmm. I get why it's there. I get how it could easily be worked toward. But what? Like, where is the story? None of that doesn't factor or play at all. And so I was like, surely there is something missing that speaks to this.
Well, if there was, it would be from the mother's side, because she's the one who has that line. So it'd have to be something she learned about. We understand what the daughter learned about herself, quote unquote. While
but did she learn anything about the mother? Was it that she transposed her empathy for Uncle Buck and understanding about Uncle Buck's love for her onto her mom?
She understood why he had to be a parent. She understood that by being a strict, a sort of authoritarian parent, it was because he cared about her.
But we have literally never seen her parents be parents.
Correct.
To her.
So that's her transition, I think. And we understood that there was some sort of authoritarian parenting happening from her angle early in the film. But the line comes from the mother, which implies there, if there was something cut, it seems like it would be from the mother's perspective, where she learned something because she says this thing's going to be different now, implying she's going to act differently.
All I'm saying is it seems like a totally bizarre loose end. And I'm glad that they dropped it, especially if it wasn't working, because the only relationship you really care about is Uncle Buck and her. Yeah. And I would say to you, I liked her. I thought she was a good teenager. Mm-mm. She was like Ali Sheedy in The Breakfast Club. She's almost exactly the same.
Stop everything. She's almost the same. Ali Sheedy is so great in The Breakfast Club.
She's the same character.
No.
She's literally, except for the more troubled elements of her, she's literally the same character.
I don't credit necessarily the character writing. I credit the performance.
I thought she was good.
I would love a user listener poll on this one, because I really feel like this actress, it's just too... I love John Candy to have something to push back on that felt,
you know what I liked about
real
it?
Real to me.
You know what I liked about it? Mm. Is that it was basically, it's not the same as Ferris Bueller, but it's at that point, you're basically seeing her, the teenager, through Uncle Buck's eyes, basically. Mm-hmm. And she's an immovable rock. And he just keeps kind of needling and badgering her to kind of go his way. And he's like you said, he's an authoritarian. Just forcing her to comply to his rules. And what I liked about it is in that situation, she's not going to give him anything. Mm-mm. And so I liked that she is just completely cold and that you never see behind that veneer, because from Uncle Buck's point of view, why would you? And yet he knows that she's needing parental guidance, and he knows that she's needing some kind of authority figure.
But we meet her before he comes in, and the performance is equally dour.
Because then you see, like, that's her mom. You don't get in this girl's head, is my point.
No,
it's like,
but it's
not
a
her story.
Performance. I know that, but
no. It's not her story. It's intentionally.
She can still be a good actress, though. I would continue.
I think she's great. She does a great Stonewall.
I really disagree with you.
You think she does a bad Stonewall?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I really do. Listen to me. I really do. Like, in my heart, I think this is my main complaint about all of Uncle Buck, is that performance.
How have we gone this long and not just talked about John Candy? It's making me crazy.
Well, I'm avoiding him because...
I hate this. He's all there is to talk about.
So let me go through some of the minutia of the plot real quickly. That's basically it. You can talk about John Candy now. I feel like that's the film. I really liked it and needed it. The obvious flaws don't bother me.
Yeah.
I think it still remains fun. And they felt like quirks and not lapses of filmmaking as they would possibly in other films. Except for the performance.
You know, my friends and I sometimes like to talk about movies ratings like with a star, like a 3-star movie with a star.
I've never heard of this.
We made it up.
You mean you do like 3 out of 4 stars or something. That's how you
No. But you say it's like a 3-star movie. It's like 3 out of 4 with a star. And like the star is like there is something extremely notable here, and that doesn't elevate or change its star rating, but it makes it a vital part of the conversation. Do you know what I'm saying?
I wish we weren't in your basement when you sounded so nerdy. I wish we were like in a cooler place.
but listen to me. What I'm building toward.
I get it.
John Candy is, it's not and also John Candy's in this movie. Like this movie, it doesn't fucking matter. Like we talk about a lot of movies that don't matter, and Uncle Buck is better than them, but only marginally. Like, it's a movie that you could catch on TV. It's almost a Lifetime simple
movie. I caught it on
TV
a bunch. I realized when I was watching it, I saw this on TV a bunch.
Yeah, and it would be just a thing that's in the world, except for the fact that John Candy's in it. So I really want to talk about the nature of nostalgia and how things exist in our mind do completely to a lead star performance.
You can't watch Uncle Buck and not think this movie is nothing without him, because if you think about the character and just the lines and what happens, it's a very boring film.
Yeah, it is.
But and I did think that a lot while I was watching it. But he and
I would even say, and not to just keep harping on the flaws of the movie, but like his character, they don't do a very good job, because the way that you would theoretically do this movie, and the way that I think many people probably remember it, is like he would be a complete incompetent taking care of children. That's not what happens. He's fine.
He's great.
He's pretty good at it, in fact. And he comes into it with a skill set that he uses very well. He can connect with the little kids. He looks out for the older daughter. He makes some food. He makes sure they're picked up on time. He's very good. He's a perfectly good babysitter. And like the fact that the mother is like terrified of him suggests he's going to be a total shit show. Well, and he's not. Like, he's not a guy who drank too much. He's not bad uncle. You know what I mean? Like, you would think that this is like bad uncle.
Yeah.
And it's not. And so the arc, the arc that he goes through is super simplistic, but it's not even done right. And yet it doesn't matter. Nothing matters, because John Candy, what are the words?
Lovable, charismatic.
Charismatic, human, real, like
charming.
Warm, charming, inviting. Like, you feel like anybody in the world could spend time with this guy, John Candy, if not necessarily Uncle Buck, and you would be welcome, you would be loved, you know, like, he is such an ingratiating, personable, wonderful guy, and so naturally that person. Mm-hmm. That it's really remarkable. I never really understood what a great actor he was just by making it seem so effortless. And maybe it was. I mean, maybe he was born for this. And that's why he was such a big star, because very few people are born with this innate ability to cross through a screen and make you love them and make you feel loved. Like, it's, I can't explain it.
Yeah. That's 100% why it works. Because when the movie first starts, I kept thinking it's a really hard screenwriting task to make someone just a much of a perfect amount of fuck up, where he doesn't seem to ever endanger the children, 'cause that makes you dislike him. He's not an alcoholic, doesn't have any real flaws. Except for being too childish and too, you know, sort of inattentive to himself.
He's avoiding personal he's avoiding life responsibility a little bit. But
to walk that line of finding the right amount of goof is hard, because you don't want to make him crazy. You don't want to make him sloppy. You don't want to make him dangerous. You have to make him perfectly lovable.
But do you know what I'm saying? Like, you would want to do that unless your only goal, which I believe John Hughes' principal and only goal in this movie, was to make you feel good about going to see John Candy and to give him an opportunity to do this thing that he can miraculously and magically do on screen. And so he cuts the natural tension of the story from the very beginning, which is supposed to be, it's those things you described are how a movie like this is supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
Is supposed to be that you feel like, oh no, it's so funny that this guy is there. Like, you know, like you see even in like the Royal Tenenbaums or something, like he's doing things with kids or whatever that are like dangerous or like way out of line. Mm-hmm. And the only thing Uncle Buck does that's almost out of line, he feels very bad about, and he doesn't do, which is take the little kids to a racetrack.
Mm.
He's like really wringing his hands about like, this is how I make my living. I have to take you to this place, or I'm about to make some bets, maybe illegal bets, it sort of suggests, with some scuzzy people. And then he doesn't do it because he loves the kids too much and he sacrifices his payday.
I mean, that's why the plot, when I summarize the plot, it doesn't involve the two children really at all.
There's no stakes.
There's no stakes for the children, because they're sort of sketch background material. Again, fine. Totally fine.
I think it's incredible. I really think that it's a calculation. It's not a mistake, because John Hughes is better than that. He just, it would not be the same. It would not be the experience he wants it to be, or I would want from this movie, to feel anything except this is wonderful to be with him.
You know, here's a moment that really sort of exemplifies this to me, is when he first gets to the house. He gets there in the middle of the night. And listen, to the character's credit, he gets the phone call. He has a responsibility the next morning. He doesn't really want to go to, but he has responsibility the next morning. Gets up out of sleep and goes to his brother's house.
Yeah.
So great guy.
Yes.
It's a really bold move. Probably at least an hour and a half drive.
Totally.
He gets to the house. They leave, and he's by himself in the in this massive mansion that his brother's done very, very well for himself. We've seen his apartment, Uncle Buck's apartment. It's not nice. And he's kind of wandering around the living room. He plays a little lick on the piano, which is funny.
He plays the Twilight Zone.
It's really funny. And then goes over to the mantle and picks up this plate. And what you don't want him to do is drop it and break it because it's such the obvious choice. So he's standing there. He's like looking at this piece of fine china. And he drops it. And then it doesn't break. He's like it sort of rattles around in a funny way. And as an audience member, you have a sense of relief of like, oh, the movie dodged this dumb gag. That's so great. And John Candy picks it up and goes, huh, unbreakable. It didn't break. And then taps it on the piano and it shatters. It's the perfect way of handling it because it's such the it's what a kid would do. It's yeah. just what a kid would do.
I love it.
It's perfect character building. It's perfect subversion of comedic expectation. It's really smart.
God, the things he does, the little things he does throughout the entire film are the joy of the movie. And it's stuff like that. Exactly. It's like, you know, there's a describing almost every gag in the movie. You'd be like, well, that sounds terrible. Like he goes, Uncle Buck, John Candy, a really humongous guy, winds up in a little elementary school bathroom.
I love that scene.
There's nothing to
crazy.
It.
It's crazy. And they're playing Wild Thing by Tone Loke in the background. And he's walking through in this huge trench coat. But the bathroom scene lasts 30 times longer than you ever
so
think
there
it
are
will.
Like six urinals in a row.
But this is the end of the gag. Like the funniest part comes after 2 minutes in the bathroom of like shtick that doesn't pay off and isn't that funny.
No.
But then it gets to this
yeah,
and it's
he not even set up. He doesn't even have to go to the bathroom. He goes into the bathroom because he has to blow out some cigar smoke. It's stupid. Then he goes in there and then he's like sees these six urinals and he's like, well, I guess I gotta go to the bathroom because that's what the gag dictates. So he goes over there and you just watch John Candy like with his physicality and Matt like maneuver and try to figure out how he's going to pee in this urinal. And it's like, that sounds horrible, but it's awesome.
You know why? It's honest. He's not, he's not doing more than he would do.
That's right.
It's honest comedy.
It's not, you know, and I actually like this guy, but it's not, imagine how Kevin James would do that. You guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And John Candy just does, okay, I'm actually in this situation.
How do I do it?
How do I do it?
Yeah. And he ends up, what he goes for is getting down on one knee.
On one knee.
Putting the other knee kind of against the wall on the right of the urinal. And then the trench coat billows out around him like a weird tent. And he goes to the bathroom, I guess.
That's great.
It's really funny.
It's so good. And it's just loaded with that stuff of just John Candy's behavior. There's a scene. It shouldn't fucking work. And yet... It's the scene from Austin Powers 2 where he sees Fred Savage. I think it's Austin Powers 2 where someone sees a mole on someone and he can't stop saying mole.
Yeah.
Okay. You can see, you know how Mike Myers does it, you know, where it's...
This is so much better than Mike Myers.
And John Candy does it his way. And it's amazing.
A thousand times better.
Because I can't describe it except that he doesn't play the discomfort of not wanting to say it. He goes and sits down, and what he intends to say in his first sentence to this woman,
this is why
who
better.
Has a
the
mole
setup is
on her chin,
yeah.
is he goes like, he wants to say, I'm Uncle Buck, I'm Maisie's uncle, or whatever.
Yeah.
And he goes, I'm melanoma, I'm mole's wart.
Yeah,
and doesn't change his expression. and she doesn't react. And then he says, "I'm not her wart. I'm her pimple. I'm her." And then he just goes on like,
"I'm
her tumor." Yeah. They call me Uncle Wart, and sometimes they call me Melanoma Head. Melanoma Head. Well, here comes Melanoma Head.
But like, never uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's just so straightforward.
But I like that so much better than being unable to say, like, unable to stop saying the word mole.
No, of course.
This is so much funnier.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Because he's not playing, he's not telling, I mean, Mike Myers can be very funny, and it's just a very different thing. But he's not telling the camera, I'm making a joke now, which is Mike Myers' move.
Yeah.
I'm now making a joke. Isn't it funny that I'm telling you I'm making a joke while I'm making the joke? Joke! And John Candy would never. He'll just play it like a human being. He'll be given the most shticky scenarios. He will always just play it like a nice, sweet, lovable,
understated, but real still person. Plays so much larger, I think.
And it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and I mean,
God credit, damn it. Credit to John Hughes. So
and I think
much.
This is, I think John Candy probably wrote this or definitely rewrote the scene, but the writing is better and the performance is better, just to give credit to both angles of that. Like, it's a smarter entry into that gag than Mike Myers.
Yeah,
does.
Yeah.
Is this movie or is.
So let me go
in
back.
In modern day, though, like, okay. Are there people like this, and does a movie like this play that's equally sloppy? I love this film. I love it. I don't necessarily need to see it again for a while.
No.
But it was.
It's almost enough to know that it's there.
Yeah, it was a very pleasurable, warm blanket experience for me.
Yeah, me too.
Are there people like this around today, and could this movie exist today?
Well.
It's so uncynical, this film, which is John Hughes, so that's what you get, but. I don't know if this happens now.
The closest person in terms of a presence right now on screen is probably, and I honestly, sincerely am not bringing this up because of her weight, but it's probably Melissa McCarthy, who can play honest, human, real, and in big, broad comedies. And that's what she does even in her bad movies, is she, that's sort of her target. And sometimes she oversticks the physicality, I know. But thinking about her in Bridesmaids and thinking about her in The Heat or, you know, like a couple of other stuff where I think she's really good and just her warmth as a character in like Gilmore Girls, which I've seen a lot of. She has a really natural, effortless, personable, loving, lovable charisma in comedies. Yeah. She's not as good as John Candy.
No, I'm trying to think of someone. I love her, too. I think she's very charismatic, but she doesn't have the charisma. Specifically of John Candy, I feel like.
Well, there is no. I mean, the point is, there is no John Candy. Yeah. I mean, that he is a real bolt of lightning. He's a once in a lifetime natural performer and natural presence. You know, and the funny thing about John Candy, what little I know about him is he didn't need this. He wasn't an egomaniac of a guy. He was actually an extremely warm, kind, friendly person who liked staying at home with his family.
Yeah, you feel like you see him in this film for sure.
He just lets you. He has no reason not to. He feels so unguarded, you know. And he may be. I know he was kind of a shy person. I know he was kind of neurotic is the wrong word. But he wasn't like a social guy necessarily. But everyone who knew him seems to have loved him. You know, I read this actually, this kind of beautiful tribute that his two children wrote not so long ago, where they said, you know, that they come across people who are touched by their father and who remember him with such warmth and you know, friendly love that it always strikes them and that it took them a long time because they both say they look a lot like him, his daughter and his son.
Interesting.
And for a long time, it took them... They didn't understand why people were so nice to them in some ways. And that I'm sure they inherited their father's warmth. And this article seems to suggest that they did. But they were sort of talking about how it was really something to be constantly rediscovering that and to have it sort of just pour out of them in terms of people's reaction. Like people would draw that from them. As soon as they found out they were John Candy's kids, it was like this love for them all of a sudden. And they said that was who their dad was. Like, that was all. He seems to be sort of living through them in certain ways and through his work, obviously. And they're very appreciative of that. And it's very interesting and sweet article. Is there anybody like that right now in movies? You know, no.
Mm-mm. I've been racking my brain while you were talking, trying to think of someone with that sort of just the person. And I know on our podcast we've covered some people like this, but people you just want to hang out with,
yeah,
that you think would be such a fun, not fun like, oh, we'll have such a great time, but like, oh, that'd be so pleasant.
You know what, pleasant, it's, I don't know that we've ever talked about someone like that, because the naturally charismatic performers that we've discussed in the past who are like Keanu Reeves, maybe
Swayze, obviously
Patrick Swayze, we've talked about Kurt Russell, like these guys, I don't think it wouldn't be easy. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be effortless to be with them. It would be fun.
Yeah.
John Candy makes you feel like it would be effortless. And I don't know that would be the case, but it certainly comes across in his performances. And, you know, when I think about him and I think about Uncle Buck and I think about especially his performance in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, where he's supposed to be the most annoying man on earth. But you watch Steve Martin's character, who's a stuck-up kind of businessy asshole, completely melted by the sincerity of this guy. Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel. I felt from the first frame of this film. It's just like, this guy, you know, I'm sitting in my living room and he's dead. And this movie is 25 years old, whatever. And it's just coming through. It's just exploding out of the screen, that feeling. And I mean, like, I know it sounds like I'm hyperbolizing, but it really feels like something unique and very, very special that he was in movies. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's not a hard question. Is like, what is it about nostalgia that makes you love that? As a kid, you fucking loved him.
Yeah.
Loved him.
Yeah. Yep.
So, all right. That's Uncle Buck.
That feels right. we didn't talk about Macaulay Culkin in this. I mean, as a moment of nostalgia, he's
phenomenal.
Great. Yeah. Phenomenal. Just great. It's crazy how often we've seen movies try to do precocious kid tropes and fail miserably. This one, Gabby Hoffman and Macaulay Culkin are so funny and fun. Yes. And like just perfectly precocious in this film.
Yeah.
And they're doing occasionally real dumb shtick. Like, oh, what if we had this kid do this grown-up thing? What about that grown-up thing? Have Macaulay Culkin do this grown-up thing.
Yeah.
It's just a series of those things. And yet they're all so yeah. fun, even though some of them are dumb.
Oh, they're Macaulay great. Culkin sells and them I also all. Love that that's where the sort of soft anarchy of some of the filmmaking is really awesome. Because like there's one shot very late in the film, which doesn't make sense, but it's so wonderful. And it's like, John Candy and his girlfriend have just tucked the kids to bed. And it's late in the movie. It's all the problems basically are solved, honestly. So he closes the door and he's like, shh, be quiet. And he's like, aren't they great? And she's like, they're incredible. They're such great kids. And he's like, yeah, that one's smart as a whip. Like, okay, well just, you know, and he goes, and she's been badgering. The whole arc of the movie has been, he's been afraid to commit to her marriage to
he
her.
He has to grow up.
And she wants kids. And he's like, I don't know about kids, whatever. So he goes, as he's walking away from the door, very casually, he goes, yeah, you know, I don't know why you and I didn't do this a long time ago, you know, get married and have kids. And he's walking away. And then he knows he's joking. And he, like, scampers away. He, like, runs away because she's going to chase him and get mad. And she's like, oh, you? Like, but she's having a good time, too. And the camera pans and follows them into the bedroom as they run behind the door. And that's not the end of the scene. The end of the scene is that then Macaulay Culkin and Gabby Hoffman come screaming down the hall after them. And chase the, and just because they ran into the room, they run into the room. And it doesn't make sense. Mm. But it's so beautiful and wonderful and sweet. And it emotionally, it's everything. And it's nice that the movie had already broken enough rules that you were like, that's great.
Yeah. That was, you've described precisely my experience with that scene. I was like, that doesn't make sense. I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Macaulay Culkin is so, so preternaturally charming.
Well, and there is obviously, you know, I'm sure you saw it too. There's a single shot, reverse shot in the movie that obviously predicts Home Alone, mm-hmm. that is mm-hmm. Home Alone, mm-hmm. where it seems like John Hughes discovered Home Alone.
Yeah.
Which is that Macaulay Culkin is sitting behind the mail slot in his front door. And John Candy's girlfriend is knocking
with like a bag of chips. He's been there for a while. Like he staked himself out.
It looks like Home Alone. Yeah. And he's sitting on a little ladder and she knocks on the door and he flips open the mail slot and she's moved so he can't see anybody out there. And he closes it. And then she steps in front of it and he would have seen her and blah, blah, blah. So he flips open the mail slot again. And instead of seeing her, he sees three scary man faces mm-hmm. looking back at him and he goes and then closes the thing and it's like, oh, there it was.
Yeah.
They made up Home Alone right there.
Yeah. It's that exact expression he makes in Home Alone.
And it's cool because it makes me think that it's a really awesome way to build movies because John Hughes, he saw in this performance in Macaulay Culkin, there's a movie, this kid.
Yeah.
That's a movie.
Yeah.
I should write that movie.
Yeah.
And he did. And also, clearly he wrote it for Macaulay Culkin. I know he didn't direct Home Alone, but obviously it's for Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah, and there's moments of it too in that famous scene with Macaulay Culkin and John Candy where they're both monotone, deadpan, fast-talking. Are you married? No. Do you have any kids? No. We have a job? Don't need one. Long story. It's just back and forth that. Yeah. And it's so funny and so, you know.
How many consecutive questions have you ever asked in a row? Or like, what's the world record for, or what's the record for consecutive questions you've ever asked in a row? 36.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun. I mean, it's shtick. It's a sketch, but it's funny. And
it's
they're
great.
Both great. So it makes it so, so pleasurable.
Totally.
Anyway, I liked it. I really liked it. I feel, it's soothed me. I feel soothed.
Yeah.
Right now on this podcast. Because I haven't felt soothed in a while. I felt a little agitated. I'm ready to watch another film.
All right, we haven't done this. So Uncle Buck, of course, watch it, share it with people. It'll make you feel good.
Yeah, it will. Watch it with friends, I feel
what,
like.
What if we could pull anything? You sometimes ask me this. If we could pull anything right now, what would you like to pull?
I would like to see a side. I would like to pull The Matrix right now.
Huh.
That's how I feel. What about you? Or Blade Runner. Blade Runner or The Matrix.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. It's kind of a rainy day. I could see that. Yeah, I'd get into
that's
that.
How I feel. What do you feel?
I'm
glad you asked me that question because I knew in my heart what I wanted.
Yeah, you really did. I didn't have something quite at the ready what do you in have? The same way. I would like to see. I'd like to. You sometimes. You once asked for a dark drama. I'd like something a little bit adult, psychological.
Lorenzo's Oil.
Sure. That's what you want. Travis is reaching in. He's pulling
from
a
the
title
center,
out.
As we always
oh,
do.
Oh, by the way, since I can't believe we didn't do this until now, the verdict is Uncle Buck doesn't suck.
Yeah, it doesn't suck.
Does Uncle Buck suck?
And is this someone's favorite movie in the world? Quite possibly.
Absolutely. Yeah. For sure.
I did not pull what I wanted to pull.
Did you pull what I wanted you to pull?
No.
Oh, boy.
It is. I will say this.
Uh-huh.
It is the first in the series.
Okay.
It is very closely connected to last week's episode. Do you want to guess what it is?
Oh, no. It's not American Pie.
No, worse.
It's worse than American Pie?
Yeah. Well, different, but I would say worse. I've seen it, and I've seen American Pie. I would say I like this last.
Road Trip? Oh, no.
I mean, really close to Porky's. Really close. You mentioned it all in the episode.
I did?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh!
So we're going to watch that.
That's ridiculous that we're doing those so close together.
I know. I'm a little displeased, but I will be here for it. I'll show up.
All right. Well, I'm curious, I guess. Let's find out.
Well, you know what? Before you go on your outro thing.
Yeah.
It is good that we're watching them back to back because we can compare them and That's talk true. About the period and talk about the way they each approach the material.
Very true.
So I'm optimistically gearing up.
We might as well get through it right now.
Another way of looking at it.
So here we go. Next week, join us to find out if Revenge of the Nerds sucks on...
Does your favorite movie suck?